Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I am happy to be here on the show today. Thank you again, Kim, for having me. Always happy to be here when I can.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, we appreciate you having the time to share with us today. And, again, we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you.
And at Black Nonbelievers, we are still walking by sight, not faith. I miss that.
Hey, it just goes hand in hand. It kind of works together there, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, hey, we want you to think, but we want you to walk by sight and not by faith. We want to see, you know, me personally, when I put one foot in front of the other, I want to make sure I'm not walking in dog poop.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's why
that's
I got
right. You don't just want to cross your fingers and hope that it's not there.
Ooh, that's some of the problems that they've been having lately with the church. You know, it's like, you know, everybody walking in poo. If it looks like poo and it smells like poo and it kind of feels like poo, because, you know, people, those of you that have dogs, you got to pick the poo up so you know what it feels like. I ain't got no
right. Poo. It's not ice cream.
So, you know, more than likely it is poo. I mean, the scent alone is enough to tell me, so I don't know what more you need, okay?
Right.
So, yeah, so, you know, it's just interesting. It's been a very interesting past couple of weeks. The guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. You want to speak with the host, press 1. You can also Skype into the show. You scroll up to the top of the page, you'll see a little blue S that stands for Skype. Click that, and you'll be able to connect via your Skype account. So your Skype must be running at the time. So there you go. But, yeah, last week we did the show on secrets and pain, and you know, got a lot of great feedback. A lot of people wanted to talk a little bit more about the subject matter. And a lot more happened this week that, you know, definitely we wanted to talk about and kind of bring to the forefront, you know, some news stories. One in particular, someone posted on my wall, you know, it was Raina. Oh, well, let's talk about that. Raina had her show yesterday, everybody, and it was absolutely phenomenal. So her show is going to be every other Saturday, high noon, just like this show, at 12 o'clock. And yesterday she talked about reason, science, and skepticism, which is the name of her show. And she broke them down, gave you different examples, some real-life examples, and, you know, some scientific and real-world examples. And, I mean, go and check out the archives. She did a fantastic bang-up job.
Awesome.
Last Friday.
Congratulations, Serena.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And on Friday the 13th of last week, Mario and Nakomi had their show, and they were talking about superstitions. Absolutely fantastic job. They told everybody about some of the superstitions and the origins of them. So check out that archive as well. They will have a show coming up this Friday evening, and all of that will be posted in the next day or two. So, yeah, they're every other Friday. Raina's every other Saturday. You know, we just have it staggered like that. And this is phenomenal. You know, the family is growing. We have more shows that will be coming up later on this year. So keep your ears open and eye on the page, on the Facebook page, because more information is forthcoming about the shows that are coming this year and some new developments for next year. Very excited. A lot on our agenda here. So, you know, just keep up with us. And, you know, again, we thank you guys for your support. We thank you for, you know, listening to the archives. We thank you for, you know, chatting in the chat room and, you know, just everything that you've done. You know, we want you to know how much we appreciate you guys, because it's just important for you to know how much we do appreciate you, because without you, you know, the show wouldn't go on, and, you know, we got to push on and do what we need to do. But this particular story here, actually, it disturbed me. It really disturbed me. The title of the story is Mom Allegedly Whipped Son to Death Because He Wet Himself Inside Car. And
wow.
Yeah, you know, and apparently she allegedly confessed to whipping her 4-year-old son. This is a 4-year-old baby, and you should see her picture, and her eyes are closed, and she looks like she is just in so much pain, like she's hurt. I guess I'll go ahead and post it in the chat room. And but the thing is that, again, you know, it makes me wonder, just personally, did the young lady even want to have that child? Because that's another one of the secrets in our community. A lot of the parents, you know, they hide behind religion or morals and ethics or what have you, saying that if that particular child or whomever got pregnant, particularly a young lady, that she's going to have that child, and then what they'll try to use the Bible or, you know, we don't believe in that in this family. I mean, that's what I've heard in my family as well as other families. But are you making her have that child because it's the right thing to do and you're going to help her with that child, or are you making her have that child as a punishment?
Right. And also let me say, Kim, and this is not from any type of data perspective or what have you, just from interacting with human beings and also, you know, just knowing from myself, it's possible that the child peeing on himself was a catalyst for whatever other issues may have been going on in this woman's life. And unfortunately, what tends to happen to us as human beings, when we explode or when we do something that is so drastic and is so hard to believe, there are usually other factors that are in play that no one wants to, that they don't want to discuss, or there are compounded issues.
Right.
To when people are exploding. And no, there is no reason for her to have taken that out on a child like that, because now look at the world of trouble she's in. But it is an indication that there could have been other things going on in her life that she was not dealing with very well.
Right.
And I think that for us sometimes, you know, when we have so much going on, you know, when we have children, when we have to work, when we have to deal with so many other people and so many other things, and it's stressing us out, you know, if we're not handling it properly, you know, if we're not pacing ourselves, if we're not getting the help we need, you know, either from other people or from therapy or, you know, whatever,
right.
you know,
That's
it
right.
unfortunately manifests itself into a huge problem. And,
exactly.
And it's easy to become lost in that. But, you mm-hmm. know, and especially when parents are taking it out on their children like that. And, you know, I've
right.
said this before, you know, I've come from that situation. And I've come to realize that there were compounded issues that it wasn't my fault, even though I felt it was, even though I was made to feel as if it was my fault. I realized that it wasn't, that there was something else going on that was driving that.
Exactly.
But it's up to the individual not to let that push them to a point where they are killing someone, that they are severely harming someone physically, mentally, and emotionally. That is key there.
Exactly. And a lot of it is, again, you know, projection. So
yes.
they're trying to project that pain, and they're taking it out on innocent children, children who did not ask to be here.
Right.
Children who depend upon them for their everyday guidance and, you know, their everyday livelihoods. You know, these children, you know, they can't go out and work a job to bring in money for the household. And that's the reason why you see some of these kids at 11, 12 out here doing things they have no business doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, many of them are, you know, in households, and we won't even go there right now, but you all, you know, in households that are extremely dysfunctional and households where, you know, there is some abuse. And, you know, they go out and they try to find a better way, or they're trying to find a sense of belonging. They're trying to find a sense of family. And many of them find that in gangs. Many of them find it in church or what have you. But they have these outlets, and they
mm-hmm.
look to these outlets. Sometimes it's drugs and alcohol. Some of them turn to drugs as a solace, as a method of, you know, bringing some peace to them in their world. But, you know, going back to that, yeah, definitely, you know, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances that may contribute to, you know, what happened with this young lady with that child. But at the end of the day, that child is still deceased now.
Right.
So now, and so, you know, again, it makes me wonder, and I've seen this in several, you know, different situations, whereas the young lady is forced to have that child, and now that child is here. And in some cases, you know, there are some parents that resent their children, and it comes out in a number of different ways. And again, not saying that all people who spank or beat their children, because I don't believe you, well, we all know how I feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying that in all cases, you know, that those parents resent their children, but in some cases, you know, why would this woman believe that it was okay to beat that kid to the point that, you know, he's laying there limp and dead because he, you know, urinated on himself? I mean, I'm sure he said, "Mommy, I need to go to the bathroom." I'm sure he said that. A 4-year-old is not just going to sit there and wet himself unless there are some emotional issues. Now, if that boy was, you know, emotionally needy or emotionally, you know, broken, if you will, then she should have been able to pick up on that. But, again, it goes back to mental health care and mental illness, you know, being another secret in our community. And,
right.
you know, it's just, yeah, you know, the whole thing, you know, we can tie it all in. Because I remember many years ago, many of these churches and, you know, religious people would poke fun at therapy. They would poke fun at psychiatrists. They would poke fun at therapists, social workers, and basically tell people they didn't need to attend, you know, to those types of therapies, that all they had to do was come and talk to the pastor and
mm-hmm.
let the pastor get hands on them and pray for them and, you know, pray the evil spirits and the demons away. And it's not quite that simple until they realized that they could monetize it. And with a lot of the deregulation, they've been able to go out and become life coaches, and they're able to charge Medicare, Medicaid, as well as some insurance companies for services that they provide. They found a way to monetize it. So that's the reason why therapy is not as demonized and vilified as it used to be, because they found a way to make money on it. And that's why, you know, I tell people all the time, do you really think these people care about you? Some of them do. I'm not saying that they don't. I'm not saying all of them don't. But with some of these people, the end-all, be-all is what do they get out of the situation? Are mm-hmm. they making money off the situation? Do they control you? Because let's just say they do help somebody. One of the life coaches, you know, helps them through. Because in many cases, people just need someone to talk to.
Right.
They just need to vent. And, you know, this person may have made them feel good. And so now, with the human mind being as fragile as it is, now this person feels beholden to this other individual that may have assisted them. So where do you go from there? Because now you've just transferred that, you know, idolizing or idolization from one person to another
to
person.
To another,
just,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that transference, that codependency transference that we talk about. And I just, you know, again, you know, that little boy, sweet little boy, is only four. You know, there's only so much a four-year-old can get into, but I'm pretty positive that, you know, he told his mom that, you know, he had to go to the bathroom. And they said she whipped that boy for more than 20 minutes in a bathtub until he stopped breathing.
Oh, my goodness. Now,
right.
I will, you know, as having young children, you know, my sons are 6 and 4. It's not that, I mean, usually they will tell you. There are times where they don't. It can get frustrating. However, it doesn't warrant that type of punishment. You know, I mean, it's, I'm sorry, clothes can be easily
yeah.
washed if a child soils them. You know, it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world, as you say. You know, it's not something that would need to, I don't think it would have warranted that type of reaction.
Exactly. And right here it says, because she had two little girls in addition to the little boy. And one of the little girls told the investigators that their mother beat him with a cord because the belt was broken because mom kept whipping the kids so hard it broke into pieces.
Oh, gosh.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, they're talking about the history of abuse in that particular family.
Mm-hmm.
And CPS investigated them March of 2007, 2009, 2010, August of 2011, and April of this year. She did not need to have those children with that many, you know, investigations, with that many.
Right. At what point did, you know, and we don't like to say, you know, the system, this, that, and the third, but at what point did this, and I understand that when it comes to family and children's services, that these people have a lot on their plate. It's understandable, but, you know, the question has to come up, what happened?
Right.
Like, what went wrong? If there were that many complaints, if there were that many, you know, calls to that particular home, what could have been done, you know, what could have prevented this child from dying?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so now they have her under evaluation, and they claim that she is suicidal now. And, you know, yeah, CPS is saying that, you know, they're questioning whether the kids should have been removed from the home a long time ago. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. I mean,
right.
We've been called in this many times. And, you know, it's just, you know, I just find the whole thing just, it's sad. It's sad and it's disheartening because that baby lost his life. And, again, you know, tying this back into secrets. In the family, again, you know, if she does have a mental illness, you know, was that another secret that was covered up in the family?
Mm-hmm.
Because in black families, you know, they claim that they're embarrassed. And, I mean, I understand, you know, they're embarrassed and they've never had that issue in the family before. But I'm pretty sure you have. You all just
right.
have not necessarily acknowledged it.
Right.
And we have to stop this. We have to start exposing these things. And when I say exposing, I'm talking about exposing the issue, not exposing people. So I wanted to make sure that I clarified that, because if someone has a mental illness, you know, they already have enough that they're dealing with. I feel that it's our job to be compassionate and understanding and motivate and encourage them to go and get the help that they need. You know, check on them every once in a while. Are you taking your meds if they have meds prescribed? Are you going to therapy? You know, how's the job working out? You know, encouraging them to be
right.
productive citizen. I mean, you know, it's not our job to point the finger and mock and ridicule them. They don't need that. They get enough of that off the street.
Right.
From ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we definitely have to do better at that. We actually have a call from 614. May we ask who's calling?
Yeah, my name is Nate Robinson out of Columbus, Ohio. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I find that your subject is very interesting to talk about because mental health is so ignored, especially in our black community. And I think, and you kind of pointed this out earlier, that mental health is, to get mental health has been such a stigma, and perhaps you have observed as well that religion is more of the excuse not to get it. Oh,
yeah.
I'm fine. I'll rely on Jesus. He'll help me, blah, blah, blah. I don't see him coming. Or maybe it's your job to take care of it. Maybe you have the gifts, the blessings, whatever, whatever, to get the help, to at least pick up a book to enlighten yourself to do that. And I also think society as a whole, when it comes to seeing these horrible things, kids getting hurt as they have been doing, especially in our black community, it's always good when research is done to find out what makes people tick, why they do what they do, but what's done about it. You know, okay, fine, we've done all this research, but what are we doing to take better care of ourselves? I've often said to many people that it's too bad we don't have a class in our schools to help educate us on how to take better care of ourselves, how to deal with stress. We just don't have it. I'm not going to hold my breath for such a class to be taught in our schools from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade. It's not going to happen. And I've found that many people have relied on religion for us to take better care of ourselves. But in my observation, that has oftentimes failed. Even I was brought up in a Christian household myself. I left Christianity because I found it just wasn't for me, but I saw certain things that were going on. There were people that did attempt suicide, and they called themselves trying to help them, but it was with little help. There was another friend of mine that stayed in the religion that I came from, and she felt she was doing fine with it, whatever, but come to find out this past Christmas, she committed suicide. And when I talked to other people about it that were still in it, so forth and so on, the excuse I was given is, oh, she just lost God's spirit. Well, if God is capable of all this, of everything, then why would she lose it? I don't understand.
Right.
I took it offensively, and I told that person, I'm taking what you said offensively. If your God is a God of love, then why would he neglect her? You know, and I also further explained it takes a good psychologist, it takes a good friend to spot the signs of suicide, especially with someone like her. I was able to find out about a month ago how it all went down, and the girl that I grew up with, she just hung herself and didn't leave a note. So everybody's in a fog about what happened.
Oh,
again,
God.
Was she diagnosed with a mental illness?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Was she diagnosed with a mental illness?
No, she was not diagnosed. However, I did find out that her siblings had issues that were a bit deep. And they were able to navigate through their issues, which is great. And the person that I talked to that said that she lost God's spirit, you know, I said, well, I hear that her husband wanted a divorce from her. So that has to be a significant stressor for her. Oh, no, that's not the case. That's not the case. Then, exactly.
And, you know, that was probably one of the factors that, you know, encouraged her and motivated her to take her own life. But I guess, you know, I'm looking at her family, and, you know, from what you said, you know, they were able to navigate through some issues, but apparently there were some issues there across the board. So where was her support base? Well, it's her, because some people are stronger than others in regards to wanting to be out of a situation or wanting to seek help or wanting to work through the issues. And you're right. You know, they can pick up some books to try to help themselves. But again, you know, I've posted links and information is out there that where you can go and get free health care, whether it's physically or, you know, for mental health care issues. And, yeah, you may have to wait 2-3 months before you get an appointment because they're overwhelmed.
Yes.
But 2-3 months, I mean, go ahead and make the appointment and do the best that you can and get a support base. I mean, there are 800 numbers, you know, suicide hotlines. That information is out there, and I will be putting that information out there soon to help people and to show them that that information will be doing a show on suicide later on in August. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, again, you know, these people need to know that they're not alone. They're not alone, and we need to find a way to come back and to destroy the stigma in the Black community as far as, you know, mental health care. And, again, expose these secrets, not expose people, but expose secrets, if you will, and because it shouldn't be a secret. These things that should be out there, you know, in my family there are some issues with some, you know, illnesses. And, you know, when I was growing up and certain things were happening and I couldn't understand it, then all of a sudden someone would say, oh, well, that runs in the family. And I'm like, well, why didn't anybody say anything? You know, I'm sitting here trying to diagnose myself. Me and the doctors are going round for round trying to figure out what's wrong with me. Well, you could have told me.
Exactly. There's a friend of mine from a few years ago that got into some trouble, and she was abusing cocaine. She got into some big trouble, and then I found out that suicide was an issue in her family. And then when the issue was confronted with her, the depths of denial and the anger that she went through that was even brought up was amazing. And again, it's like, okay, we've touched a nerve, and perhaps that's something that was running through her mind, because I also noticed how she was going through some deep depression. But again, the denial can run ever so deeply, and sometimes I'm even shocked about it. And again, it points to, we need more enlightenment on this issue. The media and the marketing folks do a great job at selling stuff. They are phenomenal. They have broken down to a science. But why can't we sell people on the fact that we have to learn to take care of ourselves? Don't be in denial. Face the issues. Is it going to be hard? Of course it will. But nothing great is worth it if it's not hard, if I said that properly. And as far as the church, there are a lot of these electric ministers out there. Is it okay if I use a name?
Certainly, please.
Okay, let's. The name I'm going to throw out there is Creflo Dollar.
Oh boy!
There's someone I know that's going through some things right now, and they are looking to Creflo Dollar, if I'm saying his first name properly, to help them out. And I cringe at that name. And when I brought that to her attention, it's like the circles I'm around, people physically cringe at that name. You know, he may, on the surface, say some things that may be worth it, but is it really? You know, he's, in my opinion, one of the biggest con artists out there. And someone that's going through issues that follow him, and there's a lot of people that follow him, I don't find them getting the true help they really need. They're still lost. And I think he counts on that. And many of the churches, in my opinion, will count on it. They want to relate it to sin, whatever.
If I can interject real quick. Yes, they do count on it. You're absolutely correct, because as long as these people aren't getting the help that they need and they aren't getting balanced depending on the situation, you know, basically they still have control over that person. They can still guide them and, you know, guide them in the direction that they want to guide them in. But in addition to that, they know that these people aren't stable, if you will. And what they do is they feed them a bunch of information, and they keep repeating. If you notice, the sermons are the same. It's a repetition. Yeah. And they keep repeating the same thing, and they have the people in the audience and the congregation repeating it. And, you know, one of the things that they teach you in school is for memorization, that if you have someone repeat something at least three times, then it becomes part of their psyche. And that's the reason why you have people today who can quote their pastor, but not necessarily quote the Bible. But, again, they don't necessarily want these people to go and get the mental health care that they need, but they also teach these people to keep the church secrets as well. And
that's right.
Excuse me, regarding your friend trying to get help from Creflo Dollars Ministry, I can pretty much tell you what's going to happen. If she's been tithing and offering, you know, giving up her money, and they see that she's been helping, you know, with the financial aspect of the ministry, they may help her. Now, if it's for gas or lights, they have the CETA program. That money is coming from the federal government. A lot of people don't realize it when they go to their churches for that help, that it's not the church giving them the money. The money is coming from the federal government. In some cases, some programs, state and city governments. So, you know, that money is guaranteed to come from those, you know, different entities there. But if it's for something like her rent, now some of these churches, and I know Creflo has this, they have these flush funds in which they put money in there to help different members, but you have to be a faithful member. However, if she's sitting in a ministry, whether it's the helps ministry or whatever, you know, any type of volunteer position with the church, they may help her, but then they're going to sit her down because she was not a good steward of her money, which is going to open up another set of issues for her. And that's how they do that. But in some cases, I've seen them turn people down. So it doesn't matter if you are a faithful member giving every week your tithes and offerings. If you are not in good standing, they, you know, when I say not in good standing, meaning if they don't like you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's about it right there.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's right. If they don't like you.
Go ahead, hon.
Yeah, if they don't like you, they're not going to help you. I can say that it's being seen by others what's going on with her, and there is a plan in place to deal with or to help her out. Things are kind of happening behind the scenes with her, but she's, because of friends like myself, she's going to be able to get the help. She's been given some things, certain tools, so she can help herself. So I think that's going to turn out okay. As long as, you know, it's going to help her wean her off of Mr. Dollar. but what has happened with him recently in the press about him allegedly hitting his daughter, that has hit home for her.
Mandy and I knocked that out the park a few weeks ago. And basically, you know, again, you know, as Mandy was saying, you know, a few weeks ago, Mandy, you tell them what you said.
You do know, I remember? usually, when you have, and I think that it has been confirmed that was probably not the first time that an incident of that type had occurred in that household. Usually, when something is reported, it's usually probably not the first time that it has happened, because when patterns of abuse and patterns of violent behavior, they do run in. You know, they do run in families. You know, it is pretty much not just a learned behavior. It's a combination of factors, but yes, it's usually not something that just occurred overnight.
Right, exactly. I so 110% agree with that. A matter of fact, with my one friend, it triggered a memory where her father put hands on her.
I was going to say, usually that whole spare the rod and spoil the child and that type of discipline is unfortunately encouraged by churches and religious behavior.
Right. Well, she said this happened when she was a teenager. There was this sense that I get is there was some sort of dispute going on, some sort of argument, and he backhanded her pretty good. It's like, whoa. And then Well, I've met him. I mean, he seems like a nice guy. But I will say the big thing was happening with him right now is he's actually seeing a therapist, and he did that voluntarily.
Mm.
So I find that very big on his part.
Right.
However,
mm-hmm.
what he did cause some issues. So and then not only did it trigger that, but she mentioned about how she hit her oldest daughter. You know, it's like, wow. Again, I'm seeing how the dysfunctional behaviors pass from generation to generation to generation.
Exactly.
So hopefully, the new awareness that not only is he getting, but she gets as well, can end that cycle. And
exactly. Yeah, it's a perpetual cycle. And, you know, I've posted articles about how a lot of black people are ignoring evidence showing that, you know, corporal punishment is detrimental to a child's mental health. And, you know, it is commendable that the gentleman went and sought help and that he's getting help for that particular situation. And I'm, you know, just from listening to that, I'm trusting that he was remorseful and that maybe he apologized to his child, you know, for, you know, mistreating her in that manner. But, again, we have to stop that cycle. It's a vicious cycle, and we have to stop it. And, again, it goes back to something, you know, a theory that I have. You know, it's not a scientific theory. This is just a Kimmy theory. You know, a lot of these people, a lot of these people forcing their children to have these children. Basically, you know, the pregnancy, you know, may have been inadvertent. And, you know, they're forcing the young ladies to have the children. But, again, does this cause resentment? In some cases, they force the young lady and the young man to get married. And you know, and so, you know, it's just, it's interesting because I see a lot of fallout from some of these situations. Because, I mean, I've looked at some of these relationships between mother and daughter, and sometimes it seems as though the mother looks at the daughter as competition. Your daughter is not competing with you for a man. But then also I look at some of these father-son relationships. Your sons are not an extension of your penis. Sorry, no.
Yeah.
Right.
I've seen a lot of that. Even in my own family, when it came with my own father, he was such a control, or is such a controlling type of person. And breaking free from that was interesting. It was tough, but it was interesting. He accepts where my mind is now, but sometimes he wants to argue with me because he wants me to see it his way. I'm like, no, I have my own mind. Thank you very much. I ended my subscription to the BS a long time ago. Or other friends where it's like, hey, you know, oh, my dad, you know, and I see the controlling. You know, it's like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. You know, that's not good. And something else, I liked how you said when it comes to mother-daughter relationships and my own personal theory, and I don't mean to offend any of the ladies out there, but women can be some of the most competitive creatures in the world.
I agree. Women can be competitive. We can be very evil. You know, we can be just as vicious as men. So that's not offensive to me at all.
I've seen it even worse.
Some
of the things that I've seen women do, I'm just sitting back.
Oh,
I'm not
mad. Horrible.
I'm like, okay, us guys can be pretty bad. But when some of the women that I've seen, the lengths that they've gone to do what they've done, I'm left speechless. I really am.
Let's be fair.
Yeah.
You know, men handle things a little differently. Like when we start talking about women being emotional, men are emotional too. You just show it in different ways. So,
I agree.
It's across the board. It's across the board. Men are extremely competitive. It's just that you all express it a little differently than we do. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Also, the way I look at it is women are beings in emotion. You know,
I think we all are, but like Kenny said, but.
Mm-hmm. But as men, we can be such logical thinkers. That can be good, but we're not as comfortable being in our emotions as women are. And we have these egos that we deal with, be it knocking up against each other, whatever the case may be. And I'm glad I'm learning to calm my own ego down, you know, because that, in my opinion, once you calm that down, the whole world can open up to you. Other guy friends of mine, sometimes I see that ego going on and we get into these arguments. I'm like, hold on, let's just agree to disagree. But sometimes one gentleman, I said to him, he was having an issue with another mutual friend. And I said, why don't we just drop the issue and get to the nitty the gritty of what's going on? Just drop the ego. Oh, no, the ego's necessary for life. And I'm like, huh? I was amazed at what he said. Again, that denial bit, the come on now. Let's get real.
Well, I mean, again, you know, we're looking at things from two different perspectives, and I can kind of understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily 100% agree, because,
okay,
again, like I said, I'm trying to point out that, you know, we, both sexes, you know, and again, this is just a generality, you know, we express things differently. And so it's not that women are more emotional than men. You know, truth be told, I feel that men are a little bit more emotional than women. You all just express it a little differently. You know, when you were talking about the ego, men's egos are extremely fragile. And many men have self-esteem issues, even though you don't necessarily express it outwardly. You know, it's expressed in other ways. But again, you know, you have different genders, different sexes, seeing things differently. But, you know, again, I don't want to get caught up with pointing the finger, oh, you women, no, not necessarily.
True.
You know, and we have Raina on the line as well. And, you know, I see another caller that calls in regularly. If you want to talk, press 1, so I know you want to speak, dear. But, go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Kim. I just wanted to say that's nonsense. First off, men and women both experience emotions. It's just that we're socialized to handle our emotions differently. Women, it's acceptable for women to cry and to do other things that men don't do. Also, women are conditioned to see each other as competition for men from a young age. I mean, you can see this even in American culture. In my home city of Baltimore, there was a 12-year-old girl who was beaten down by a group of teenage girls over a boy at a birthday party. You know, and this is what people are teaching. This is what they're getting from the larger culture, that women's value is in their looks and how much men desire them. And as long as that is what women are told is their value, they're going to act out in ways that men don't. And there's a really good TED Talk that I recommend for you, sir. It's called, I can't remember what the guy's name is, but he's talking about the man box. And he's talking about how the society standards that teach women how to act certain ways are actually things that keep men in a box as well, because it tells you that your manhood has to be defined in a particular way. And you need to listen to that, because it's really important, because it's not that women are more conniving or that women are more evil or that they act out in different ways than men. Men can be just as devious and conniving as women. It just depends on your perspective. It just, it's a matter of perspective, and it's this idea that we can just make these generalizations based on gender is just absurd.
Okay.
Especially when you don't want to deal with the sociological underpinnings of this behavior.
Yeah. What's the name of that again?
It's a TED Talk, and I think it's called The Man Box.
The Man Box?
The Man Box. It's a really good one. He's talking about how, like, if his daughter is hurt, you know, she can cry all day. But if his son comes to him crying, he's telling him to man up immediately. And his son was only 4.
His son was only four.
You're telling a 4-year-old to man up. What's wrong with you?
What I find funny is, I remember, well, my son's 18 now, but I remember when he was just a baby and he was crying and so forth and so on, and I was, you know, wanting to hold him, but I was driving so forth and so on, but then my brother chimed in, oh, you got to man up. And I'm thinking, oh, man, what are you saying? You know, he's crying for a reason, you know, if anything, comfort him, you know, because I have Yeah, you're right. We men are taught not to show our emotions. We're taught it from not just in the family, in the church, but on the television screen and the movie theaters. And that's
exactly
that's caused a whole lot. Obviously, it's caused a whole lot more harm than good.
Exactly.
You know, because
Of course, because it results in maladaptive behaviors like drug abuse, like men who act out violently. You know, a lot of these men who get into bar fights every weekend, that's not because like they just like getting in the fights. I mean, some of them might. I doubt it.
That's how they're expressing their emotions.
But you know, they're expressing their emotions because they're not allowed any other way, because they're taught that to be a man and to be masculine means that you have to act in this particular way.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look at all of the things that men call each other that when they don't act in a particular way, they're all insults that have to do with, you know, the feminine. So it's just you have to study where that comes from. That's patriarchy. It's misogyny where that comes from.
Yeah, and it's one of the social constructs, particularly in this country. And again, you know, that's why I was saying earlier, you know, we express things differently, you know, and you all do express it more physically. But, you know, the whole thing is interesting. We have Mario on the line as well. Hey, Mario.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on, Mario?
Nothing much. You know, anybody who knows me knows that I don't really get much into setting up this box here and saying, hey, you fit into this box. So everything, the title of this box says, men, all of y'all in this box act and do this. And I don't really get into all that. Well, I was trying to call in earlier to talk about you was discussing drug abuse and family life and whatnot. Am I correct about that?
We're talking about, you know, abuse, and we're talking about, you know, how certain abuses are covered up and it's, you know, secrets, and how we need to expose these secrets, not necessarily expose people. And the young man was expressing when we were talking about how I made a comment about how some women or mothers view their daughters as competition, and how some fathers view their sons as an extension of their penis. And he was talking about, you know, the mother-daughter relationships in that regard. Not all mothers and daughters, not all fathers and sons. I said some. And so, you know, we were just talking about how men and women express their emotions differently, express their competitive ways, if you will, differently. So we were just talking in generalities as far as that's concerned. Raina kind of cleared some things up, and she's telling about a book, which I'm sure she's going to post to my page a little bit later.
It wasn't a book. It's a video. I posted it in the chat room, but if you want me to put it on the wall, I'll go ahead.
A lot of times when I hear that stuff, I think about my own childhood, and I realize how much of that I did not experience. I mean, when I relate my family history, as far as I know, most people know that I speak openly about my fact that my mother was on drugs, she was abused by dudes and stuff like that, and in and out of jail, prison. She was even in a gang once upon a time, sold drugs, you know what I'm saying? You pretty much name it, my mom did it, you know what I'm saying? My grandmother also had a hard life. My grandfather had a hard life. My grandmother's mother had a hard life. And so, you know, living in government apartments and being poor and stuff like that, and you're seeing that, you know, as the oldest, more and more stuff's falling on you the older you get. And everything, and I didn't grow up with a father. My grandfather was very quiet. So, as far as, you know, the male female dynamics, I didn't really learn about all that. All I knew was that, you know, saying my life sucked, and how do I deal with this? Well, a lot of times the way I dealt with it was to bottle up, pull back into the turtle shell, and hunker down and weather the storm as best I could. And so I guess a lot of that family trauma, family pain is affecting my personality now, to where there are a lot of things that I'm still quite uneasy about. And it doesn't seem like there's much of change in my family, in which my siblings have repeated the cycle. And I guess in a lot of ways, the cycle I wanted to break the cycle, which is one reason why I have no kid. And it goes into a lot more stuff. I don't want to halt the show or anything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Can someone turn the radio down for me, please?
Yeah, please. I just wanted to say you don't necessarily have to get that from your parents in order to, you know, get those sorts of messages. Those messages come from the culture around you, from the movies you watch, the books you read, you know, to the interactions that you see all around you. You don't have to necessarily get all of that information from your parents. Just like you don't have to get messages about race or racism from your house. You can get them from your teachers. You can get them from television. You can get them from anywhere. So that's just, I just wanted to clarify that.
I have a question
sure.
for the gentleman. Sir, as I listen to you, what are some of the ways of how you deal with what you deal with? How do you overcome? How do you strive? How do you keep your fight going?
Sometimes I feel like I'm on autopilot. But
okay.
at the same time, you know, growing up, you know, just helping out my grandparents and helping my siblings and now helping my nephews or something, I'm so used to helping other people that I often, when you ask me what do I want to do, I have no clue. So I guess a lot of times it's purely on, I don't know, I'm on autopilot and just, you know, I don't even know how to explain it. But most of the time I read, though. You know, I immersed myself, and that's one of the reasons why fantasy novels became the primary books I read was escapism. Just this world right here is not real, but it's something I can relate to because it's something I want to escape to and everything. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I don't have a lot of the society constructs because, well, I didn't have very many friends to glean those off of. And most of the groups I tried to fit into, I realized I did not. And so I would go back to either reading and stuff like that. So I pretty much kept to myself.
Okay.
Excellent. But that ties in with the comment that the gentleman made earlier about people reading. I mean, not only reading about, you know, mental health care issues, but some people do find reading as an escape, as a form of escape, but, you know, it's interesting. You know, you found that as a way for you to be able to kind of cope with the situation. And, you know, and that's a good thing. I mean, you found a way to, you know, try your best not to continue to perpetuate that cycle. And like you said, some of your siblings are perpetuating the same cycle. And, you know, I know that's heartbreaking. It can be. Especially when you know better and you're trying to explain that to them and trying to show them that there is a better way.
Eventually you deactivate from it, though. You know, just kind of teach yourself that whatever the chips are going to fall where they may with that situation, there's nothing you can do about it. So instead of driving yourself crazy trying to prevent from happening what is going to happen anyway, a lot of times you just realize there's nothing you can do. It's going to happen one way or the other. Yeah, especially Grandma always told me you can't help somebody who don't want to help themselves. So I really kind of, but to this day, my nobody from my family has actually been to Macon to see my apartment. So, you know, I keep myself away from it. And that's normally how I deal with it. I still talk to them on the phone. I still drive by the house, you know, once or twice a month or something like that, though.
Right.
Yeah, and I can identify with that because I pretty much do the same thing. I keep a certain amount of distance myself. I keep distance. You know, I'll say, hi, how you doing? I'll poke my head in. Okay, yeah, I'm still alive. I'm right here. But I'll see you later. And
right.
I know for me, reading, I love to read. And I love to read all sorts of stuff. And I've used reading for the same reasons. Definitely. Definitely. I haven't really gotten to the fantasy part, but there's all sorts of other stuff that I've gotten into when it comes to reading.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the whole thing, like I said, it's a lot of things that are going on. And, again, with the secrets and the pain, and you know, a lot of stories dropped this week. I know I posted another story about some ladies of the night, some prostitutes dropping a dime on ministers, on dirty ministers and deacons in the church that have approached them, and again, you know, it's just interesting because more and more of these things are starting to come out. And again, you know, dealing with sex and sexuality, you know, we've been taught that sex is dirty and that
right.
it's some sort of secret. And again, you know, it's about exposing, you know, not exposing the person, but exposing the situation. And, you know, we have to learn how to overcome that. Sex is not a dirty thing, but when you continue to keep things like sex and even with the mental health care issues, when you turn them into issues that people feel that they need to hide, that's what creates a lot of the issues that we're dealing with. And if it was just out in the open and people were allowed to be themselves and allowed to express themselves and allowed to live, you know, in a manner that they see best and what's fit for them, I believe quite a few of these issues would either go away or we'll be able to control them a lot easier. And so I just found that interesting with that particular article that they were talking about, you know, what's happening in some of these churches. And it actually featured a book by a young lady, Miss Cooper, The Black Church, where men pray, P-R-E-Y, and women pray, P-R-A-Y. I got that mixed up, but, you know, the premise is the same. But, you know, it's just the whole thing is interesting. A lot of this stuff is starting to come out. That's not the only thing that came out in the church, you know, this week. Another issue that came out, and I have posted that as well, with TBN. Allegedly, TBN covered up the rape of a 13-year-old. And it's the granddaughter of Paul Crouch, Jan and Paul Crouch. And again, allegedly, you know, all of this information is starting to come out. And I posted it earlier this week. But what's happening? Because, you know, everybody was pointing the finger over at Penn State regarding, you know, the Sandusky. And again, we examined what happened with Eddie Long down in Atlanta. And now this issue here. Why are they trying to cover up these issues? I mean, people need to be prosecuted. This information needs to come out because there have been, this is not anything new. And that's why I want to express to people, these types of issues have been happening in families and in communities and churches for a long time, but it's been covered up or swept under the rug. And in order for us to really, truly heal and to move on, I believe that we need to confront these issues and bring them out to the forefront. And maybe some of the older people that dealt with that issue and that continue to perpetuate some of these, maybe they'll get the healing and the therapy that they need. And the only way that will happen is if we talk about it. We have to talk about these things. It has to be brought out to the open. You know, if this is true, and that young lady, the 13-year-old, well, she's not 13 now, but she was 13 when that happened, and 6 years later she's 19. But if this happened, you know, why did they try to cover it up? And, again, you know, now they're throwing their own granddaughter under the bus, like Creflo threw his daughter under the bus. And basically Jan Crouch, her grandmother, told her that it was her fault. And apparently the young lady went through a really dark period in her life. And, you know, because people didn't believe her, she just, you know, gave the information to her parents, you know, not too long ago, within the last year or so. And, you know, I'm not understanding that, because in many cases they're re-victimizing the victim. And how are people going to heal? How are people going to heal? That's one of the interesting things that I find about religion.
They're not worried about her healing.
Go ahead.
I was saying they're not worried about her healing. They're worried about her being, you know, under her father's thumb. They're worried about her guilt just keeping her in the spot. You know?
Exactly. They're worried about the image of their ministry.
Yeah. That's what they're worried about.
Exactly.
They're not worried about her.
No, they don't care.
As a matter of fact, when Creflo Dollar, when his dirt recently came out, one of the things that I saw posting from a friend on my FB page, his question was, why does Creflo Dollar even have to answer to his church what happened? He's so good, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, hold on, wait a minute. The focus is on what happened between him and his daughter, not him. Why are you focusing on him? I don't get that. I've never got that. And I see that, as the young lady just pointed out, I see that a lot. I see it all the time.
Yeah, they do it quite. Yeah, I see that as being no different than in Middle Eastern countries when they're really strict about their Sharia law and whatnot. A 14-year-old girl gets raped, it's her fault. We got to stone her to death. I see it as being the same thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's a shame that we're going to hear more. And I like the point that was just brought up. This has been going on for a long time, a whole lot longer than anybody wants to recognize. And it does have to be dealt with. But
exactly.
When will it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because you have people out here saying that they care about the younger generations, especially when you hear some of these people, oh, we don't want to leave the debt to the, you know, younger generations. Well, as far as I'm concerned, debt is more than money. What about the psychological, the emotional, and the physical, you know, penalties and, you know, all of these things that are being handed down to these children? Because, you know, if someone was molested as a child and then they turned around and molested someone else, and then that particular child, when they grow up, they molest another child, again, to me, that's another debt. We owe it to these children to bring these things to the forefront and to help them and help ourselves so that maybe we can stop it. Maybe we can become a healthier, you know, community, a healthier culture. And someone in the chat room said, how do you calibrate the relationship between cover-ups and the perpetual gossip you hear all the time, for example, about preachers bonking female parishioners? And I guess my, you know, answer to that particular question is basically, if the rumors are out there and if those things are happening, then it needs to be talked. You know, maybe you have a mediator, have an arbitrator. And, you know, we've seen people attempt to do that in the past, in which the minister or the person in leadership, they'll deny it. And in many cases, let's say it's a male in leadership, because in most cases it is a male, and the female is blamed. And she's re-victimized. Let's just say it did happen. She's re-victimized all over again. And what it does, it discourages other women and other people from coming forward. Which is why I thought the issue with Eddie Long and Creflo Dollar, and even with this TBN thing, that's the reason why I think it's dangerous. And what I mean by that is the people will come forward and they'll, you know, tell you what happened in that particular situation, and then you have these powerful people in leadership. Basically, they turn around and demonize and vilify that individual. And what they're doing is trying to make an example of the victim to show other people, this is what's going to happen to you if you speak up. Now, if it's a false allegation, then, you know, again, between having, you know, mediation or arbitration of some sort, you know, in most cases that will come out. In some cases, not so much. But, again, it's been so much that's been covered up over the years, you don't know what to believe anymore. But I know what I've seen from personal experience. And from personal experience, I've seen a lot of these ministers and these ministries literally do whatever they wanted to do and tell people, if you go back and complain or try to tell someone about it, no one is going to believe you. And that's because they've trained them to not believe them. They've trained them to re-victimize the victim. And we have to work on that. We have to find a way.
Well, in a lot of cases, they don't have to train them because most people have, to a certain degree, human beings trust in various authorities, whatever, you know, how they pick those authorities is, you know, depending upon the person or the group. But, I mean, you can always go back to Stanley Milgram, you know what I mean, and trust in authority or the perception of authority. So you don't necessarily have to, you know, training your parishioners, hey, don't listen to what other people say about me, you know?
Exactly. And so we have to get so much better at this, putting the information out there and talking to one another about these issues. Because, you know, in many cases, you know, they'll call it church gossip, and in many cases, there's some truth behind it. It's some truth. You know, it's a lot of open secrets out there, you know, and I just find it interesting because a lot of people, they don't want to talk about the issues. They want to deflect or talk around it. Or, again, you know, in some cases, they'll steer the people into not saying a word about the situation. Our call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. Press 1 if you want to speak with us. And we have a caller on the line from area code 803. Are you there, 803?
Peace. What's up? My name is Victor, calling in from North South Carolina. Hello? Hi, how you
doing?
Yeah.
Good,
yeah,
and yourself?
Yeah. I'm doing good. I just wanted to say one thing. I think that one of the problems that we as a people, though we can't really agree on a culture. I think that when the people don't have a culture, we're always going to be lost and just agreeing upon these little, all these different issues. I think that, you know, when we separate ourselves because of religions or our beliefs, which is belief is a concept of reality, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to be different perspectives on, you know, how we define what's real and how we came about creation and life, those things. But for the bottom line, we don't really have a culture per se, which is ours, or we say we black or we African American. We can't even, you know, agree on those particular terms. So we inadvertently fund our own oppression by even, you know, being separate like this. So I think that the first and foremost, once we have a culture, then we can begin to, you know, once we agree on the culture per se, we can then start to heal all these different elements that come up within our lives and in our communities.
But, okay, and I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but, again, you know, our community is not a monolith. So, you know, it's comprised of different people, different, you know, intellects, different ideas, different, you know, thought processes, so on and so forth. And by the time we decide on what our culture may or may not be, years have gone by, and, you know, decades in some cases, and the problem still persists. You know, turn your radio down there. And, you know, the problem still persists. We need to deal with the issues at hand, and then maybe we can continue having a conversation as to how we identify with one another. But,
well,
again, we're a monolith, so everybody is going to be different.
Right, everybody's going to be different, but when we say, well, okay, you're this and I'm that, then there's just like a disconnection there. I think that we have to identify ourselves as being on the same page. And then, because there's always going to be problems, you know what I'm saying? There's never going to be time when there's not problems there. Problems are really really a gift that life gives us to really see who we are. It makes us become more. So problems, it's not really problems per se. It's just the contrast of life. And I think that, you know, that's what we're here to experience, differences. It's like, if everything was the same, then it wouldn't be as great to be here. Everything would be pretty much bland. So the differences and the problems that we have is what gives life its actual spice. So I think that the main important, me personally, I think that the main important thing is that we come together to where we say, you know, if we black people or we African American people or whatever, that comes before anything. That comes before our religion. That comes before our beliefs. That comes before anything. And that way we can all help each other because, like, okay, if you need help, it's coming from somebody who's a Christian. It's gonna be kind of twisted. Or if a Christian needs some type of help, it's gonna feel funny coming from an atheist. See what I'm saying? So once we get past all these different labels and titles of what we believe and what we don't believe, and we say, yo, this is our culture, this is who we are, this is what we do, I think that everything else will kind of start to fall into place, and we can all help each other. You know, now the information comes from all different directions. So you won't be just limited to it coming from a person who just is an atheist or a person who just is a Christian or a person who just is a Muslim, that type of way of doing things.
I see where you're coming from, and, you know, and I understand exactly where you're coming from. But, again, we have to find a way to heal because, you know, if we don't heal or find a way to resolve some of these, you know, personal and interpersonal issues that we're having, even coming together as a culture, if you will, is going to present some issues because, number one, you're going to have people jockeying for power. Number two, people aren't going to agree on certain things. But again, you know, again, the focus of this show, Secrets and Pain, and there are a lot of issues that are swept under the rug and a lot of issues that are overlooked or ignored in our community, and we need to deal with those issues before we can even talk about or have a real discussion as to how we can become a culture, how we can present things. Because as when someone called in a couple of weeks ago and they were talking about President Obama and saying he hasn't done anything for the black community has not put together any real political action committees to present an agenda for us. So if we have no agenda, how do people know what to address? And the same thing with your cultural issue there. If we have no real agenda, then how are people going to address those particular issues? But, again, you know, how are we going to put that forth when we haven't even dealt with our own personal issues? How are we going to help everyone else when we haven't helped ourselves?
I mean, I think I feel what you're saying, but I think one of the biggest problems that we have as a people, like I said before, is the fact that we don't know who we are. See what I'm saying? Like, you have people on, our people on St. Patrick's Day wearing green, like they down with St. Patrick. See what I'm saying? So we have an identity crisis that's going on. So you have individuals that don't know who they are, it's going to spring up a lot of different problems internally because you don't know what to identify with.
I don't know. I kind of find it really hard when people say you don't know who you are, because if you think about the way I act and the way I grew up in high school, you know what I'm saying, you know, I guess by whatever rules are set down to describe a black person, technically I may not be one.
Well, I mean, you can define yourself however you choose to. I'm saying is that if you look at history, we can agree on our own history. So you say, well, okay, we started off as slaves, or are we mathematicians, are we kings, queens, or that type of thing? Well, you have different cultures,
right.
Like, you know, like the Japanese, where they got bombed with, you know, nuclear weapons, and you have the Jews who got, you know, with the Holocaust. These different things,
right.
And they was able to rebound, not only rebound, but rise to even higher states because they knew their history, they knew who they was as a people. So no matter what they've been through, they were still able to get back and rise above.
Let's go back to what you just said. What you just said about history, and again, I'm going to tie it back into, you know, the subject matter because I don't want to get too far off. But again, history. If you know the history of your family, you know the history of your community, the history of your culture, and if the issues have been becoming perpetually or subsequently worse, then why are we not dealing with it? You know, and again, I'm taking it back to Secrets and Pain, you know, in our community. And again, you know, we've talked, you know, a little bit about pedophilia. We've talked about abuse, whether it's physical or emotional or psychological. And, you know, again, I understand where you're coming from, but we have to deal with these core issues because it's like peeling an onion. You have to peel it one layer at a time to get to the root of the issue. And that's been a lot of the issue in our community is that no one wants to talk about the problem. In some cases, the older generations have, you know, covered up so much. And that's the reason why, you know, in the leaderboard, in the storyboard, it's, you know, I put there our family secrets meant to protect us or protect the image of the family. And that can be extended to the community. There are a lot of community secrets as well. Now, are those secrets meant to protect us as a community, or does it protect the image of the community? Because, you know, again, you know, we have to start peeling this. We have to start exposing these issues so that we can possibly find a way to get some help. And it's just interesting, but, you know, I'm going to move on from this. But, you know, I appreciate your calling in and bringing this to the forefront because, you know, yeah, again, you know, it extends outside of, you know, our family. It extends outside of the church. There are some cultural issues that we definitely, you know, need to address, and we need to expose some of the things that have been swept under the rug in that regard as well. But, you know, another issue that came up besides the TBN, Juanita Bynum. She finally confessed that, you know, she has, you know, proclivities of a certain type, which is fine, you know, because you know, the scuttlebutt had been out there all the time, that, you know, she, you know, delved on both sides of the fence. So, you know, she dealt with women and men, which is fine, you know. It's just that people were in a lot of denial. She was in denial. You know, people in the church are in denial. You know, the LGBT community is a big part of the church, and that's another one of the very open secrets in our community, and it needs to be dealt with. That's why I reposted the article in which it dealt with how a lot of ministers are now coming to the LGBT community and apologizing and trying to make amends. And, you know, we've spoken on this particular subject matter, you know, in the past before. And, again, I just want people to pay attention, because there are some that are truly remorseful, and the ones that are in the community, the LGBT community, that have been covering this up, that have been denying themselves and denying others. You know, the political climate now is allowing people to come out and be themselves and say, hey, I'm a member of the LGBT community as well. And so I'm glad she was able to express herself and put that information out there. But the question is, you know, what damage has been done when she's also given sermons that were detrimental, that were negative to the LGBT community? And again, a lot of this information is starting to come out. And so where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? You know, she's come out and said that she's, you know, part of the LGBT community. But on the other hand, she says she's been delivered from that, her and a few other ministers. And again, this information is out there. You know, these are secrets. These are things that have been covered up over the years, and it's starting to come out. And again, it's politically expedient now for people to come out of the closet, if you will. And so, you know, are they appealing to the LGBT community because they are truly remorseful, or are they appealing to the LGBT community because they need the money? Because in many cases,
it might be some. Sorry.
Go ahead, honey. No, go ahead.
It might be some. It might be some of all that. You know, it might be some of all that. You know, I mean, I'm not certain that you can. I mean, if you actually tell me that you used to be gay, not as in I did it with this one person of the same sex once or twice or something like that, it didn't work out, never did it again, but I'm talking about you actually were with several people of the same sex over years of time, I can't really see you telling me that now you've been delivered from that, because even if you're not doing it anymore, I bet you got some lesbian porn on your hard drive.
I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, I was going to say, if she's saying she's been delivered and she's been doing this for years, you know it's in her heart, it's in her blood. How do you get delivered from that if you've always had these feelings, these urges? I don't get it.
Yeah, right. I don't think that you can do all that. You know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I believe that some people really are remorseful. I do believe some people, you know, like anything, human nature, they're going to use, a lot of people are going to use it to their own benefit to make some money off of it. And, you know, you still got a lot of people in the LGBT community who still believe they're Christian and still go to church on a regular basis. One of my ex's friends, my ex had two gay friends who came in the house all the time and everything like that. And you always hear them still talking about going to church and singing in the choir, and we're going to get up on New Year's Eve and go to church and stuff like that, and they're thinking, those people don't like you. The book in the book says, you know what I'm saying, but they go anyway. You know, so you even have gays starting their own church, and it's like, if you can radically alter a portion of the Bible because it offends you, you remove that and then focus on everything else. If you can alter that, then doesn't that tell? Well, no, it don't. But I think it should tell people that you can always alter religion to suit what best suits you. And, you know, we'll have another story out together, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I
would love to. Go ahead, honey.
I would love to hear them explain in detail how they were delivered from these urges and these feelings. You know, I mean, if she's going to find another woman attractive, not just physically, but the qualities about that woman, and she's drawn to her, and they have intimate occurrences, how do you stop that? I would love for them to give me a detail on that, because I'm lost. And I like the point that you brought out about how you have other gays and lesbians that are starting their own churches, so forth and so on. It's like, okay, here's a portion of the Bible that speaks out against you, or you're going to this church and these people don't like you. How do you reconcile that? I don't get it. Are you that caught up in the myth that you feel that you're being delivered, or you just feel that you're part of something bigger, or what? Because according to their holy book, you're a sinner. And you are someone not to associate with. You are going to hell. You're going to burn forever because you are not worthy. How do you reconcile that?
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly. The call me your mic is live. That's correct. And, you know, that's another secret, you know, that people need to understand and realize there is no such thing as deliverance. And they monetize that as well. That's why you have all of these ex-gay ministries. That's why you have some of these same people that are claiming to be delivered. They get caught, they get caught out here. And usually when they get caught in another sex scandal. So my thing is, let's remove the stigma. Let's remove, all of the, expectations that are not attainable. Let's move those out of the way. Let people be human. Let people be people. Because, again, the majority of the people that we're talking about, just in general, I'm not talking about Juanita specifically, but most of these same people, they get kind of caught up, and I'm going to defend them a little bit. You get kind of caught up in the mix because you have this public image, and you're trying to uphold this public image and present this public image, but in private, you know that you cannot live up to that. And so many of them do have, serious issues with cognitive dissonance. This is what I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to act, but this is what I really want to do. And a lot of people, they don't realize and they don't know that a lot of these ministers and people in leadership at these churches, many of them, not all, but many of them have issues with drug and alcohol abuse. That's another secret that's covered up in the church. But many of them do that to try to cover up and to deal with the fact that they cannot live up to the image that they're presenting. And that's not just within the church. It's also in some of our families and in the community. And, again, this type of thing, it needs to be addressed. I'm happy that she's able to come out and be who she is. I commend her on that. I wish her the very best. I hope she figures out what's, really going on with her and lives her life accordingly. But again, we need to deal with some of these issues. These issues are definitely on the forefront, and there's no such thing as deliverance. I'm letting some people out there know that they still have, that religious mindset or that religiosity. No, either you do or you don't. There are some people that decide that they no longer want to participate or partake in certain activities. So what do? You stop.
Mm-hmm.
You just stop. There's no such thing as deliverance, and that's how some people get caught up. They claim to be delivered from drugs and alcohol once they go to church, and what happens is they transfer that codependency. So now they are no longer dependent on that drug or alcohol or sex or what have you. They no longer depend on that to make them feel good, to give them some sense of peace and tranquility. Now they've transferred that to Jesus and the church. And so now they have that. And it happens. And it happens quite a bit. And we need to understand and get a better understanding as to what's happening to us psychologically in situations like that. We have to start talking about it. I think they call it ego dystonic sexual orientation. Is that correct, Raina? Ego dystonic sexual orientation?
I've never heard of that You know, I've also been out of psych for a while, so, and, you know, I'll probably explain that to you for, you know, later. But, no, I don't know off the top of my head, ma'am. I do apologize.
Oh, okay.
Probably
oh, that's
a better question for Dr. Bev.
Okay.
What is that called again? You said ego what?
Yeah, ego dystonic, D-Y-S-T-O-N-I-C, sexual orientation. And basically what it says is that, you know, here is an ego dystonic mental disorder characterized by having a sexual orientation or an attraction that is at odds with one's idealized self-image, causing anxiety and a desire to change one's orientation or become more comfortable with one's sexual orientation. So,
that's interesting.
You know, yeah, it's quite interesting. You know, I'm still doing some reading up on this myself to get a better understanding as to what's happening. But, you know, the way that I see it is, you know, there's some people that, you know, have conflict, you know, again, that cognitive dissonance. And, you know, quite a bit of that is in the church. And what I would do is encourage these people and tell them, be yourself. Be yourself. Live your life. Enjoy yourself. You only get one chance, one shot at this. Enjoy your life. And, again, if it's about the image, you know, whether it's within a family, because there have been situations in which people have taken their lives, committed suicide, because their family rejected them because of sexual identity or, you know, gender identity or sexual orientation. You know, how can you turn your own child out? And when I say turn your own child out, I mean turn them away. Turn your back on them because they happen to be LGBT or whatever the issue, you know, in your eyes may happen to be. That's still your child. And so, you know, I'll never understand that. I'll never understand that, you know. And, you know, that's the reason why we have a lot of LGBT, you know, children that are homeless and running the streets. The majority of children, according to statistics, the majority of homeless children are LGBT because they've been kicked out of their homes. They've been turned away from their families. And
they had to
you know,
run away.
Exactly. 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 And, you know, it's just it's disheartening. It actually breaks my, you know, breaks my heart.
Oh, absolutely.
It breaks my heart.
I remember growing up seeing that a lot. You know, parents turning their back on a child that may be lesbian or gay. Now, here recently, I've seen a little bit of a turnaround. Maybe it's because now the younger, at least my generation, is now getting a little bit older, and now we have children that are becoming grown themselves. And I'm starting to see more acceptance of those. But that's the circles I'm in. You know, that I'm starting to see more acceptance, which is great. But as far as the other, I've worked down at the juvenile detention center in my hometown, and I can definitely agree with that statistic because a lot of the kids that came through were lesbian or gay, and they told me that they got kicked out because of their parents' religious affiliation.
But, yeah, exactly. And then in many cases, you know, the family will keep it secret. I remember, you know, certain family members, you know, that were, well, one in particular, LGBT, and it was like a big secret in the family. And if it wasn't a secret, they tried to turn it into a joke until more and more people started coming out as LGBT. And even now, it's not even really talked about or spoken within my family. And, you know, there are other families the same way. It's like, you know, they're embarrassed or it's the family secret or one of the family secrets. And, again, we have to stop it. We have to break these cycles. We have to combat the stigma and the shame. And, you know, again, we have to help these people. It's not up for, you know, mock or ridicule. You know, they probably get enough of that, you know, from other people. So, you know, why would they expect to get the same type of thing from their family? You know, it's just interesting. But we need to heal. We need to heal, and we need to talk about these issues and bring it to the forefront, and there are going to be people who disagree, which is fine. There are going to be hurt feelings, which is fine. There are going to be some tears, and that's fine, too. But it has to be addressed, you know, because with each subsequent generation, this issue is getting worse. And so we need to do something about this. You know, mental illness is not a crime. It's a health issue. And I'm glad that they're starting to address it such as that, you know, with sexual abuse. You know, we need to bring that out to the forefront. You know, there are a lot of children that are being hurt by adults as well as other children, because some of those other children have been hurt by some adults. And what they do is they turn around and they'll, you know, repeat the behavior with another child. We have to address these issues, you know, the physical and emotional abuse. You know, it's just a lot of things that are secret in our, you know, communities, you know, whether it's our families, and again, the extension of that, you know, illiteracy. You know, there's a lot of illiteracy, a lot of functional illiterate, you know, in, you know, our families. You know, I've seen that in my family as well, you know, as well as the drug and alcohol abuse. You know, we have to stop it, and we have to stop lying about, you know, what happened. You'll have people in a family who thinks that, you know, Jane and Joe are his parents, his or her parents, and come to find out, you know, Jane and Joe really is their grandparent, and the person that they call their sister is really their mother.
Yeah,
but
I've ran into...
Go ahead, honey.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've ran into that. I know I, about 10 years ago, I was taking care of an aunt of mine, and little did I know that I had been fighting family battles that had been going on for the past 50 years. I would cling, you know, I would all of a sudden hit heads with certain family members, especially my father. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? I'm by myself taking care of this elderly person. Then I come to find out that her son was born through an incestuous relationship. And, you know, of course, that threw me for a whirl. But because that was kept secret, that did more harm than good, especially if I'm taking care of this person and I have to deal with her mental issues as well. And then he's calling on the phone, and he's haywire himself, you know, because of certain experiences he's had. That fighting family secrets from my own personal experience because they want to protect the image or something like that, it's a little bull, especially if you have to take care of someone elderly. And all of a sudden you have to decide, okay, once they pass, what's going to happen with their house? What's going to happen with any assets that they may have attained? That, and all of a sudden people start fighting over it, and you come to find out certain people feel entitled to certain things because of certain abuse that they went through or some other controversy, especially when it has to do with mental health.
Exactly, and you're correct, you know, and that's, you know, another, you know, form of the secrets that I'm talking about that we need to bring to the forefront, you know, again, and even with, you know, you're talking about the incestuous, you know, relationships. That's been happening a lot in our families as well. And, you know, I was reading a story about they had a family member that was intersex, or as some people may call it, a hermaphrodite, if you will, and that's someone who's born with basically both genders. And, you know, it's really complicated, but you can go and look that information up and come to find out that that particular child was born through an incestuous relationship between a brother and a sister. And, you know, these types of things happen in our families. And, you know, again, it's a secret. And we have to bring that out. And it's interesting that you would bring up about the family fights, you know, during a death. That's also another secret. You'll have people fighting over, you know, an estate or fighting over, you know, items in a home or what have you. And you're trying to figure out why all of these people are jumping into this fight, and come to find out that, you know, again, yeah, there are some issues, again, whether it was with abuse or, you know, a child that nobody knew about, you know, because in one of the stories that I posted, basically it was talking about an aunt in the family who never had children. At least the family thought that this aunt never had a child. But when the aunt died and they went through the aunt's belongings, they found the birth certificate of a child. The aunt had a little boy that she had given up for adoption. You know, and this was everybody's favorite aunt. She would do everything for everyone and, you know, spend time with the children and buy things for the children. And see, these are things that we have to talk about. We have to talk about this and bring it out to the forefront So again, that people will know that they're, number one, not alone, that there are other people out here that are dealing with these particular issues, and that, you know, if we just bring it to the forefront and talk about it, it's okay. There's nothing to be ashamed about. Things happen. Things happen, but, you know, how do we make sure that the subsequent generations do not pay for things that have happened in the past? So, you know, it's just as important that, you know, we start talking to one another, bringing these issues out, you know, trying to find, you know, solutions to it. Again, you know, if a person, you know, needs mental health care, that's out there. And, again, we have to stop victimizing the victim or re-victimizing the victim, because that's not fair, and that's what causes some of these other issues that, you know, we're dealing with. So we have to get better at that. We have to get better at that. So, yeah, you know, and if someone had brought up about the show, well, someone brought up about the show last week, they were talking about parents that cuss at their children. That's a form of abuse, people. You really shouldn't be sitting there cussing at your child and saying, you're not S, you're never going to be S, or it's your fault for telling the child that you never wanted them. It's just, you can't do that. You cannot do that, because then now
you shouldn't talk about their parents and like that either. You know, like if you're a father or mother and you talk about the mother or father of your child badly, you shouldn't, especially not to the child. I mean, sometimes you get caught saying something you shouldn't be saying, but you know what I mean? But saying it, you know, to the child, like the child is somehow responsible, you know, that's messed up.
That's true. That's true. Just because the two of you aren't getting along or you may have separated, that does not give you the right to sit down and talk badly about that other parent to the child, because, you know, you're causing a conflict for that child and you're trying to force that child to pick sides in some cases. And that's not fair and it's not right. You know, again, the two of you liked each other well enough to make that child. So there you go.
When I've seen that, you know, parents cussing at their children, you know, I've often questioned, you know, obviously you've never been taught any parenting skills or something like that. And that's okay. Just learn. Understand and be aware that you need to learn. And with kids, you have to develop a new sense of patience. They're going to try your patience. They just are. They're kids. It's a new world to them. Sometimes they want their way, and there are reasons why they can't have their way. And sometimes that needs to be explained to them. But especially what I've seen in religion, many parents will say, I don't need to explain anything to you. It's just the way it is. No, if you explain things to the child, then you're also educating that child. You're enlightening that child as to why. And then instead of them just doing as you have asked, you're doing it not just for you, but they do it for themselves, because they now have this new awareness that if this is a protection or whatever other reason there may be.
Right.
Can't disagree with that.
I add something to that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and again, you know, these are things that we definitely
people.
Yeah, it needs to be brought to the forefront, because, you know, too much has been swept under the rug. Too much,
can you hear me?
You know. Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
What were you saying?
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of, you know, ignorance and a lot of miseducation in our community. And that's why I feel that it's important for us, you know, some of us, part of the Free Thought community, to get out there and start educating people on these things. Another secret, you know, in some of these families is, you know, again, going back to the issue of death there. When you have certain family members, you know, that pass away, and there are some that, you know, may have passed on from complications of AIDS. And, again, just to clarify something for people, you do not die of AIDS. you die from complication of AIDS. So, you know, they may die of liver cancer or some other sort of cancer or other form of death. But, you know, again, family, some family members, they know that this person, you know, had HIV, which, you know, escalated to AIDS, full-blown AIDS, and they died from, you know, whatever illness or ailment that may have happened to be. But they keep that secret. They don't tell anyone that this individual had HIV and AIDS. And I feel that, you know, with each of these secrets, these are teachable moments. So, you know, if you have a family member that happened to pass away from complications of AIDS, then to me that presents an opportunity to sit down with the people in the family, the older and the younger generations, and educate them on HIV and AIDS, and educate them on birth control and prophylactics. Why can't we make those teachable moments and, you know, help people to become better? Because, you know, another one of the secrets is, you know, you'll see some of these senior citizens, they'll move into some of these senior homes or assisted living facilities or what have you. And especially with some of the men, when they get their check around the first or the third or what have you, you'll see these young girls coming into these facilities. And they will have, you know, relations with some of these older men for money. And now you have 65, 70-year-old men that have discovered Viagra. And not in all cases, in some cases, they're perfectly, you know, healthy. But, you know, they're coming up with herpes and syphilis and HIV and all of these STDs. And, again, that's another secret in the family, another secret in the community. And, but, I mean, why can't we take these issues and make them teachable moments? That's how I see it. Turn it into a positive. Instead of continuing to allow it to be a negative issue, let's turn it into something positive. Maybe we can help someone else.
Right. So not only by turning into a positive situation, you could come up with some very creative solutions on how to deal with it. I have found it amazing that when you go and teach a kid like that, the solutions that they can come up with for themselves, you're truly teaching them how to be independent.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so it's just interesting. Again, you know, like I said last week, you know, we have these family reunions, we have these family gatherings. Why can't we have a family healing? So, you know, during a family reunion, you know, take a few minutes out and, you know, maybe have a little forum, have a little session in which you can kind of just air your grievances and talk to one another. And maybe, you know, during a family reunion, you can have a historical account, you know, a moment in which someone can tell you about the history of the family. Because, I mean, every family has the family genealogist, you know. You know, you can have someone do a track back and find out that, you know, Queen Charlotte is your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. You know, that's Victoria's Secret. Anyway, but, you know, just information, you know, information like that, you know, why can't we turn these, again, the family gatherings, whether it's a family reunion or people gathering together for Thanksgiving, and for the ones that still celebrate Christmas and even beyond that, we're not just talking to people in the free thought community. We're talking to people in the religious community as well, you know, during Christmas, during, you know, even in some cases when you have gatherings at your churches. Why can't you all just sit down, air out your grievances as adults and be civil about the matter and sit down and talk about these issues so that we can grow and evolve? And if we address the issues, you know, again, it can be a teachable moment for the younger generations. You know, you have people pointing the finger at these young folks saying, I don't know where they got that from. I don't know why they are acting the way that they are. They got it from you.
Mm-hmm.
They got it from the adults. They may not have necessarily gotten it from the adults in that family. Again, you know, as Raina said earlier, they could have gotten it from people off the street. They could have gotten it from television. You know, you have a number of different examples out there. But, again, they're learning it from someone.
Yep.
And so we have to do better. We definitely have to do better. So, again, you know, secrets and pain in our community, in our families, you know, in these churches. And, you know, again, you know, I'm glad that, you know, Juanita has, you know, going back to her, Juanita has come out and, you know, professed that she is or was a member of the LGBT community. But again, you know, for the times in which she, you know, vilifies the LGBT community, does she owe the LGBT community an apology?
Yep.
So did she say that she was cured of that, or she just full out admitted she's bisexual or whatever?
I think she basically was just saying like she had done it, but that she was young and she was, you know, she had been doing drugs and other things, as though, you know, the drugs and whatever she was doing had something to do with it. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. She was trying to, you know, she was basically putting it out there that she had done these things, but not taking ownership, not saying that this is because this is my sexuality. So basically she can, you know, straddle the fence so that she can reach, so she can kind of call herself reaching to LGBT community, saying, oh, I understand you, but at the same time saying, I understand them because they don't understand their sin. They don't understand that it's a disease.
Smoke, but then inhale, huh?
You know what I mean? Yeah,
smoke,
exactly.
But you smoke, but, yeah, okay.
So, you know, I just find it interesting because she says now she has wisdom. And, you know, it's just interesting.
Because she didn't have wisdom before when she was with those women, when she was coupling with those women. But, yeah. She didn't have wisdom then.
hey, she has wisdom now to put it out there in the public, but enough to know what she needs to do to keep it quiet, what she's doing now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in her case, she's down in Atlanta, Georgia, which is pretty much the black gay Mecca, if you will. And so, again, she has to find ways to, you know, attract people to her church. And it's just, you know, it's just interesting how she's using
that. All I have to say is when the dirt comes out, I won't be surprised. I don't know when it's coming out, but it's coming out at some point.
And I think
that's the only reason that she said anything. That's the only reason she said something. Because somebody's getting ready to say something.
I agree with that.
Oh, yeah. And also she was promoting her play. She has some type of stage play going on down in Atlanta, too. And also she wants to keep her name in the news as well, because she had been denying this for a while. And as a matter of fact, there were some YouTube exposés, and these people came with receipts. They had proof of this. And, of course, you know, Juanita denied it then. But, again, you know, just looking at the bigger picture, you know, again, I just hope she takes it and uses it as a teachable moment, because there are a lot of people that are part of the LGBT community that follow her ministry, that are a part of her ministry. And, you know, hopefully she can take this moment and, again, start the healing process, because, again, she's down in Atlanta, the black gay Mecca. There's really no way to get around this particular issue. And, you know, it's a lot more to this than what's out there, but it's starting to come out slowly but surely. And, you know, again, Juanita, you know, I just appeal that you do something positive with, you know, that information and not continue to mistreat the LGBT community, because you're in denial. Because we have to get beyond that. We definitely have to get beyond that. But, yeah, so that was that. And, you know, it's been interesting. You know, going to another thing that's happening, you know, in the news now with the voter registration. And they're purging, you know, voter rolls. And basically, you know, what are we going to do about that? You know, I believe it's about 75 days, something to that effect. We only have about 75 more days to register to vote. So, again, I encourage everybody to go and start trying to register now, because it is getting increasingly more difficult to register to vote. I found that out personally when I tried to register when I was trying to renew my identification. So, you know, again, get out there, register to vote, understand what's happening now with the purging of the voter rolls and, you know, people being made to show different types of identification. It's basically nothing but a poll tax they found a different way to enable and enact a poll tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening
mm-hmm.
out here now. And, you know, again, you know, there are some of the politicians that are honest enough to put it out there. But, again, you know, that's another little secret of what's happening, you know, what's happening, you know, in the community. And we need to get out there. And I'm not telling anyone who to vote for, and I'm not telling anyone who to vote against. I'm just saying we probably need to get out here and vote. And not only, you know, during the times when it's a presidential election, but also, you know, the local elections, state elections, so on and so forth. We need to get out here and become more of a viable force. Because, again, you know, when the young man called and he was talking about, you know, President Obama not doing enough in the black communities, about how the roads are in disrepair and the homes are dilapidated and the educational system, you know, pretty much is failing our children. Basically, these things were happening before President Obama was elected, and it goes back to something that I said earlier. And, you know, where is our agenda? And Eric from Common Sense Conversations, he did a two-part series that I need to catch up on today, and basically talking about, you know, what do we have to present? You know, they talk about these other groups. These other groups have, you know, political action committees. They have lobbyists going up there to appeal for them. What exactly do we have? And what are we trying to present? And what exactly do we want? Because, again, you know, you have, we're not a monolith. We have different people wanting different things. But, again, you know, we just have to get better at all of this and start exposing these secrets, exposing what's happening out here, and, again, trying to make it a teachable moment, you know, try to heal from the dysfunction and the, you know, the maltreatment or the maladaptive, you know, behaviors that we've learned over the years. You know, it can be turned around. You know, now we may not see it in this generation, but, you know, hopefully, you know, as time goes on and we learn and we become more cognizant of the detrimental effects of some of these behaviors, hopefully it will get better. And that's why, you know, I love, you know, having the internet and having access to the information out here. It's exposing a lot of this. And we're also able to get the information to educate and inform ourselves and others. You know, many of us connected via, you know, social networking. And I've, you know, met some wonderful people and made some wonderful friends, you know, through social networking. So, you know, it does work. You know, it has some good sides to it. But, again, exposing these secrets, you know, and, again, us as individuals, finding the information to give to other people and encouraging them to grow and evolve and to bring these things to the forefront. And, again, it's about exposing the secrets, exposing the behavior, and not exposing the people. And because, again, in many cases, they've been through enough already that right now they just need someone to kind of reach out and show some understanding, show some compassion, show some, and, you know, just show them the way. You know, you can't do it for them. They have to want to do it for themselves. But if we can pass along the information and encourage them, I believe that's what matters the most. So we have to do better. But we've come a long way. So, again, I don't want to undermine or disregard, you know, where we've come from. And but I'm glad the information is out there, and I'm glad, you know, we're trying to do better. And, again, you know, some of these secrets, you know, again, one of the questions that I posed, you know, are these secrets meant to assuage the leader's fear and their ego? And whether it's in our family or, again, religion or in the community, you know, what's really going on? You know, so these secrets that are being kept, who is it helping? And to me, it's helping the predators and the perpetrators. It's not helping the victims. And so we just, again, like I said, got to get better at this. We've come a long way. And, again, you know, hopefully we learn something, you know, from these things that are being exposed and we can move on. So, you know, and again, I thank you guys. Thank you all for calling in. I thank you for, you know, participating in the chat room. I'm thanking everyone who's going to listen to the archives. Our show next week will definitely, it'll be about feminism. And we'll be addressing some of those issues as far as, the, you know, feminist
hey,
movement.
Kim, you would do it when I won't be on to listen.
Oh, man.
I'm so
Okay, well, then maybe we'll push that back to another week. Well, 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah,
like
you know.
Okay. Okay, we'll.
Because you know Randy going to come in like Shira.
So I'm changing my notes. Feminism 2 weeks from today. I have to figure out what we're going to talk about next week then. But at the feminist show 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing a show on race. So after the feminism show, we'll be doing a show on race. I'm going to do a series on race. The first show will be about self-hate. Okay, because
right.
I feel we need to deal with that particular issue before we can deal with some of the race issues dealing with other cultures. So, next week, I'm not quite sure, but you guys will know in the next few days what I decide to talk about next Sunday. But Friday coming up, we'll have Mario and Nakomi, and that information, I'll be posting that tomorrow as far as creating the blog talk. Information that'll get done tomorrow evening. And the next Saturday we'll have Raina coming back with Reason, Science, and Skepticism. And, you know, again, you know, you can catch me every Sunday at high noon Central Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And, again, thank you. Thank you. There's more exciting things to come with Black Free Thinkers. More shows will be introduced in October. And then, you know, some fun excitement, you know, for next year. We'll be introducing more variety. And, you know, again, for those of you who have been with us and those of you who are joining us, just want to let you know how much I do appreciate you. And, again, I just wish you all the very best. You know, you can inbox me, email me. If you go to the Black Free Thinkers blog talk page, you'll find the archives in which you can see the past shows, previous shows. There are some subjects that are going to be reintroduced, so they'll be coming back around. And feel free to reach out, inbox, email me. Information for Black Nonbelievers of Chicago is out there, so blacknonbelieversofchicago.org. You can visit the website for that, blackfreethinkers.com, which will be revamped soon. All of that information is out there. And, again, wishing you all the very best. Have a great rest of the weekend and much love. Take care.
So let it be, here's a slow jam for your radio program with the one and only your brain. In a world where so many are the same. We just want everyone to be free. If you're black and you're free,
well, this is your place to be.
Yes,
and that was Amani the Misfit. And you can download that song for your personal enjoyment. Just contact him. The information is on iTunes. And again, have a lovely weekend.